This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in just a little bit, I'll let you know where I've been right and where I've been wrong over the past week in the sports world. We'll get to that coming up. But don't forget to get your picks in by the end of the week. Still time, but the weekend can sneak up on you. You have till Friday at 5 p.m. to get your picks in for our weekly Pick'em contest. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com to make your picks today or by the end of the week for this football weekend. The winner will get themselves a Fan Zone gift card. I can't include it in where I was right or where I was wrong this weekend because I was dead even on my picks. 4-4-1 for the picks over this past weekend. Just to run through them briefly, I thought Virginia Tech would give Pittsburgh a real hard time. Dead wrong. More on that in just a moment. I thought Tennessee could potentially beat Ole Miss outright, and they almost had a shot. In fact, if you ask Tennessee fans, they believe that their opportunity was taken away from them. Hence all the bottles on the field. They still have a chance to win. They were very close, but didn't pull it off. I knew Indiana would give Michigan State a hard time. I knew Vanderbilt would keep it close, but not that close with South Carolina. I knew they'd keep it under 18. I just didn't know it'd come down to the final minute. I knew 14 was way too many for Clemson against Syracuse. I don't know why they're still so overvalued in the eyes of Vegas. But in the NFL, I thought the Lions would get their first win of the weekend, and that certainly did not happen. I should say first win of the season this weekend. Wasn't even close. And I thought the Washington football team would hang in there with the Chiefs, and they did for a half, but then the Chiefs turned on the afterburners in the second half, and maybe a sign of things to come for Kansas City. In that first half, they had three more turnovers. They looked like the struggling Chiefs this year. In the second half, they shut out the Washington football team, blew them out, and it looked like, okay, this is the team we're expecting to see. Sometimes it takes a little time, and then you get that moment. It all clicks. It comes together, and you start to roll. We'll see if that's the case for Kansas City. But they played a game of two halves on Sunday, and the second half looked like the Chiefs that, you know, we were kind of expecting to see. So get your picks in by the end of the week. I'll give you my picks, of course, on Friday. I said to take the Titans last night. That came through. We are over 500 on the year, 44-39-3 with our picks at 53%. We'll get to our picks at the end of the week. So where I've been right, where I was wrong, we always start with a positive.
Where Luke was right.
Well, this isn't a positive for the person involved, but it's Ed Orgeron. I said last year that he wasn't going to make it to 2022, that he's on the Gene Chizik path where you win a national championship and then you're out of a job 2 years later. And this was fairly obvious to see well in advance, not just from me. Right? I'm not just some sort of genius around here. I mean, I am, but not as it relates to this topic. You knew it as well. Everybody knew it. Ed Orgeron wasn't going to be long for this job. It became clear. I mean, not to mention all the stuff away from the football field that we didn't even know about that was going on behind the scenes, some personal matters about a guy, you know, a single man with a lot of money now trying to hit the ground running with the women of the area, but also just the program itself. I mean, under 500 against Power 5 teams since the national championship, lost his talented coordinators, couldn't replace them. You lose a Heisman quarterback. That's tough to replace as well, as good as Max Johnson is. And LSU, they may have high standards around there, but you can't win a national championship and then follow it up with two 500 seasons trending in the wrong direction. That doesn't make anybody happy, especially not in those parts. So I was right, but weren't we all? We knew Ed Orgeron wasn't going to last very long with LSU the way these last couple seasons have unfolded.
Where Luke was wrong.
I'll take an L with Iowa, but only to a certain extent, because Iowa's season is still ahead of them. If they win out the rest of the way, they go to the Big Ten. They'll be favored in all their games the rest of the regular season. They get to the Big Ten championship. They win that game against whoever. I think they're still a playoff team. But where I will say I was wrong about Iowa is that I was pumping their tires all year. I was telling you they're the best team no one's paying attention to. It makes me look bad saying all these things to have them then go out and lay an egg against Purdue of all teams. Purdue is now ranked for the first time in 14 years. For Iowa to lose at home to Purdue, first time Purdue has won against a top two team on the road in almost 50 years. That's not a good look. And while Iowa's season did not end, the biggest takeaway from that game was how they were somewhat exposed. Right? Like Alabama lost last week, and everyone was dancing on their grave. there wasn't really a big takeaway in that game on the Alabama side because it didn't end their season, and I don't think it exposed them either. But for Iowa, they were exposed a little bit. The offense has the 13th fewest yards in the country. We know it's not a great offense, but the concern is Iowa, and I talk about this all the time, can only win one type of way, playing good defense and getting turnovers. What happens if your three-point shot is not falling that day and you're a team that only shoots threes? Can you find another way to win? That's the problem for Iowa. They're a very – it's a one-track team. If they don't get turnovers, if they don't take care of the football, if they fall behind early, they don't have the firepower offensively to come back or to make up for a loss in the turnover margin. Iowa needs to play a certain way to win. That's where they're vulnerable. We saw that on Saturday. They got blown out by Purdue. Why? Because they were -3 in the turnover margin, and their offense fell behind, and they couldn't do anything. They threw three interceptions in the second half once they were trailing because that's not how they can play. That's not their style of football. So that's my concern for Iowa. That's where I'm wrong about Iowa. I think they could still be a playoff team. But I was telling you how good this team is. That defense is really good. But them as a team, yeah, they have some big-time holes that will hold them back this year.
Where Luke was right.
Clemson. I said to take Syracuse. Way too many points. Friday night at Syracuse. I figured that would be a much tighter close game. Syracuse plays nothing but close games. Clemson had an extra week to get prepared. You know, see, maybe they get the offense figured out. I don't think this is something that can get figured out on the fly. You can show baby steps. You can improve a little bit along the way, but it's going to take a full offseason, overhaul some things, get a better offensive line in there, clean up some certain parts of your offense, come back next year and try to regroup. But I still don't get this. Now, Vegas finally adapted this week. They adjusted with the Pittsburgh game because Clemson's an underdog. But I did not understand the last few weeks why Clemson would be favored by so much. They were favored by 14 at Syracuse outside of that, who was it, South Carolina State? They only averaged 14 points a game. Finally, those in Vegas look at this team and say, oh, yeah, we have to change our opinion. Now they're underdogs at Pittsburgh, and rightfully so. Don't stop expecting, you know, the old Clemson team to show up and blow these teams out or score a bunch of points. This is what Clemson is. A lot of close games, low-scoring games, going to rely on their defense. The offense is very much a work in progress. They're going to shoot themselves in the foot a bunch on that side of the football. And I figured Friday night's game would be close. I didn't think it'd come down to a last-second field goal, but I knew it wasn't going to be no easy win for Clemson in the
Where Luke was wrong.
Cincinnati. Couple of different reasons. And we touched on this earlier. Number one, I've said this many times, I never thought a Group of Five team would be a playoff team, let alone be ranked number two in the country as we sit here currently. Number two, Cincinnati, I did say this year that if they beat Notre Dame and Indiana, right, they would be fine. If they win out and they win those two games, they would have a chance to make the playoff. But they are better than even I anticipated, which takes me to point number three. I put them on upset alert this past weekend against UCF. And it wasn't close. They beat them by over 30 points. They scored over 50 points for the second straight week. They're blowing everyone out. I thought that could be a tough matchup for Cincinnati at home against Gus Malzahn and UCF. It wasn't at all. Cincinnati is that much better than the rest of the conference. So I was wrong in a number of different ways for Cincinnati. I never anticipated they'd be the number two team in the country. I did not think that while they are a good team, and I thought they would be, you know, a top 10 team this year, I didn't think they would be this good. And I also was concerned about that matchup against UCF. I gave you three upset alert games. Michigan State held off to beat Indiana by five. That was one of them. It was a one-possession game. Oklahoma State had to erase a double-digit deficit to come back and beat Texas. That was the second one I gave you. And the third one, like I said, Cincinnati-UCF, that was the only of the three that was never in doubt. Cincinnati came out, handled their business, blew out UCF. Michigan State struggled. Oklahoma State struggled. Cincinnati did not. I was wrong about Cincinnati this past weekend, and really, how this season has unfolded, I never anticipated they would be the number two team in the country. But as I said last hour, I do think they deserve to now be the number two team in the country.
Where Luke was right.
Alabama. All right, a lot of talk about the concerns around Alabama after their loss to Texas A&M. So what do? They follow it up by going to Mississippi State, beating them by 40, holding them to their worst offensive performance of the year. Even I was a little concerned about that Alabama defense, not the team as a whole, but I said, you know, this defense isn't as good as we thought. Yeah, Saban heard all that. So too to the team. He puts the chip on the shoulder. The players come out. They roll against Mississippi State. Not a great team, but that was a classic Alabama performance. Win by 40. Bryce Young looked good. Had four touchdowns. Their defense was suffocating, and they just they took out the frustration from the prior Saturday and the week that they had to hear all this nonsense. Took it out on Mississippi State. Alabama will be just fine. They will be in the SEC title game against Georgia. I'll only get you that far. You know, like you're a hitchhiker, I'm picking you up. I can't take you exactly where you want to go. I'll get you close. Same idea here, because I have no idea who's going to win that SEC championship. If I had to pick today, I still think I trust Saban and Alabama more than I do Georgia. But if you listen to the show, you know I'm a big Georgia fan this season. I think they are the best team in the country. So I can't take you that far. But I'll take you up into that game. I'll tell you, it's going to be Alabama and Georgia in the SEC title game, and then you are on your own to pick the winner because right now I'm unsure. But Alabama will be there, and if they win that game, they'll be in the playoff as well. Don't count them out just yet. They came out firing on Saturday against Mississippi State. I imagine they'll blow out Tennessee this weekend as well. Then they have their bye week, and they're only going to get better from this point moving forward.
Where Luke was wrong.
Pittsburgh. Couple of different things about Pittsburgh. Number one, I took Virginia Tech this weekend. I thought Pittsburgh going to Virginia Tech, this is an upset spot. And similar to Cincinnati, I was way off because Pittsburgh manhandled Virginia Tech, beat them by over 20 points. It was never close. Kenny Pickett played another good game. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the country right now. But I was also wrong about Pittsburgh in that I did say, going back to the start of the season, I did say that Pittsburgh would be the team in the Coastal to keep an eye on. Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech were my two teams because Coastal, right, we call it the Coastal Chaos. Everybody believes it's UNC and Miami, and so did I. But I said, if not them, plan B, if there is chaos, it could lead to Virginia Tech or Pittsburgh having a good year. Pittsburgh is having a good year. I didn't think it'd be this good. Never would I have anticipated that on October 19th, Pittsburgh would be favored by 3.5 against Clemson. And that when these two teams are going up, if you told me one of them has a bottom 20 offense and one of them has a top 10 offense, I would have flip-flopped the order. I would never have guessed that Pittsburgh would be a top 10 offense going into a game against Clemson where they have a bottom 20 offense. I never would have thought that the mismatch offensively in this game would be on the side of Pittsburgh. But they're favored by 3.5 at home. Very intriguing game. Clemson's an underdog in the ACC for the first time in 8 years. I'm not so sure they can go to Pittsburgh and beat them this weekend. I think it's a great game. This is a big spot for Pittsburgh. Biggest game for Narduzzi since he got there. And a chance for Pittsburgh. They're in first place right now in the Coastal. They got to keep the good times rolling here to get to the ACC title game. I was wrong on Pittsburgh not only this past weekend where I thought they'd lose to Virginia Tech, but I do think they're a lot better than I thought they were. Struggle against Tennessee, lost to a MAC team, got off to a slow start, but they have only one loss this season. Statistically, they're a top five offense with a top 10 quarterback statistically. They're favored against Clemson. This is a tough Pittsburgh team. I'm very curious to see how things go on Saturday, but I think they deserve to be favored, and they are one of the better teams, certainly, in the ACC.
Where Luke was right.
The Cleveland Browns. Now, this may be unfair, but it usually plays out this way. Trust your eyes. Right, we usually have to see something before we can believe it. It's the same thing I said about Georgia at the start of the year. The only reason why we're doubting Georgia is because we haven't seen them pull this off. But every once in a while, something's going to happen that you're never going to anticipate because you have to see it first. And you can never see something before it happens. Right, so like if Georgia wins the national championship this year, there's going to be a lot of people who look stupid just because they were doubting Georgia, thinking like, oh, they're never going to win. I have to see them win it first. Well, then you're never going to get that first prediction right. Whenever they do win it that first time, you're never going to see it coming if you have to wait for them to win it before you could see it coming. Similar to the Browns, they're in that boat as well. There are just certain teams we don't trust. Gonzaga basketball, Georgia football, the Cleveland Browns. They have to show it to me first. And they did last year and they made the playoffs. But then my takeaway was, well, you know, they had a good season last year. First year head coach, though. And a lot of times first year head coaches have an edge up on everybody else while they try to figure out what he likes to do or his scheme or his offense or his style. They can't adjust during the season, but give them an offseason, they'll be better prepared. So I said, okay, let's see year two. Everything came together last year. They had a good season, but now there's some pressure. Now they go from the hunter to the hunted. Right now the Browns, people are picking them to win the division. People are picking them to go to the Super Bowl. They got a little bit of a target on their back, specifically Baker Mayfield. Kevin Stefanski is not the new guy on the block anymore. And Cleveland, as a team, sure, maybe they had a great year, but can lightning flash twice? Can it strike twice? Because the Browns haven't had back-to-back winning seasons in 20 years. So I doubted them this year. I said I think the Browns are going to take a step back. Now, Cleveland has had a bunch of injuries this year. But even when healthy, something's been off with that team. And they're now 3-3, and really one of the bigger disappointments 6 weeks into the season. I mean, people are picking them to be in the Super Bowl. They're 500 right now. They just got blown out at home by the Cardinals. That's a bad loss, even if the Cardinals are undefeated. Right, the Cardinals didn't have their head coach, had to travel outdoors to Cleveland, and manhandles you at your own game. So for the Browns, I'm not completely punting on them this year, but I said they take a step back. I can't trust them just yet to have continued success. I need to see it first. And here we are in year number two, and they don't quite look the same as they did in year number one last year of Kevin Stefanski.
Where Luke was wrong.
I thought Saturday would have the game of the year in the ACC regular season, Miami-UNC. I thought that would decide the Coastal. The winner of that game will win the Coastal. They'll go to the ACC title game against Clemson. We'll have a hell of an ACC championship. I was way off. It was a good game, Miami and UNC, but nobody really knew what was going on because it's become irrelevant to college football. Those two teams have been such disappointments, and it goes back to what I said a few moments ago about Pittsburgh becoming the team in the Coastal. They're the team to beat. Forget about Miami and UNC. Manny Diaz is on the hot seat. Mack Brown has built up enough cachet where they're not going to run him out after just a third year, but there should be a lot of pressure on him as well because, look, maybe we've just overrated UNC, but based off of preseason expectations, they've been one of the biggest disappointments in college football the last 2 years. So both coaches are failing right now at big-time jobs in the ACC. I thought that'd be the game of the year in the ACC, and it was a really good game, but it didn't matter much in the big picture. I was off on both those teams and just the way the Coastal would play out this season.
Where Luke was right.
We have some cliches here at the Morrow Midday Show, and one of them that I always repeat at the start of every football season, I tell you every day, you're probably sick of hearing about it, week one is the biggest toss-up in football. I say it all the time. Well, when you look at the NFL this year, in week one, the Packers, Cowboys, Bills, Ravens all lost. They went 0-4 in week one. Since then, those four teams, Packers, Cowboys, Bills, Ravens, have gone a combined 19-1. The only loss was for the Bills last night. They all lost week one. They've lost a combined one game since. Week one is the biggest toss-up. Don't jump to any big conclusions from week one. The Packers were blown out and embarrassed. They haven't lost since. Right, the Cowboys lost to the Buccaneers. They've looked pretty good since then. The Bills lost to the Steelers. They've been just fine since then. Even the Ravens have played much better. They've won 5 in a row since losing week one. Don't make any big conclusions off of week one. It's the biggest toss-up. Some guys aren't ready to go. They're not in mid-season form, and you don't know what you're going to get from the other teams. You know, sometimes you get a coaching advantage there because they can prepare better without much tape on the other team, and other coaches are reliant on game film. Whatever it is, guys are coming back from injuries. Guys are rusty. Week one is always the biggest toss-up in the NFL. Don't make any sweeping conclusions based off of what you see to start the year.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Gamecocks. I thought Shane Beamer was just being, you know, a nice coach, talking up his opponent, taking the high road when he said this is going to be a four-quarter game. This is going to be a tough one against Vanderbilt. I said, no way. You're favored by 18. Now, I didn't pick them to cover the spread, but I thought you win by double digits. You win this game against Vanderbilt pretty easily. And yet, you come out of that game feeling as if the Gamecocks were fortunate just to win. And it took a last-second drive by the backup quarterback coming in and saving the day to beat Vanderbilt at home in the final minute. That game should have never been that close. Quite frankly, it's a little embarrassing it came that close. Right? UConn lost on a last-second field goal to Vanderbilt. The Gamecocks are almost in that same territory, coming down to the very end against Vanderbilt. And at least UConn was on the road. The Gamecocks were at home. That's a bad win if there is such a thing. Right? That's a win that you come away, you don't feel so good about, beating Vanderbilt by only one. I was saying last week, this is an easy win. Give them their fourth win already. Maybe I'm the one that jinxed them. This is not going to be a fourth quarter game. This will be decided much earlier in the contest. They'll be in control. No, they weren't. They were playing from behind. They were lucky to win. And I should have learned better by now than to be able to count on the Gamecocks. You can't. But that was a disappointing win, if there is such a thing, to have it so close against Vanderbilt.
Where Luke was right.
Ravens, Chargers. I said the one deciding factor in this is the running game. Now, why this is important is because these are going to be two of the better teams in the AFC. Right now, the Ravens have the best record in the AFC. But the big difference is the Ravens can beat you a number of different ways. Now that Lamar Jackson is making plays with his arm, they can beat you on the ground. That's what they did. And the problem for the Chargers is, number one, their rush defense is really poor. Number two, even with Austin Ekeler and some talent in that backfield, their rushing attack isn't as good as a lot of other teams, like the Titans last night, like the Ravens against them on Sunday. How can you beat a good quarterback? What's a good defense for a good quarterback? Keep him off the field. Keep the football out of his hands. How can you do that? By possessing the football. How can you do that? Follow me here, but by running the football. That's what the Ravens did. The Ravens had over 150 more rushing yards than the Chargers. The Chargers had only 26 yards on the ground. I like Justin Herbert. I think he's probably the second-best quarterback in the AFC, but the Chargers have to ask him to do a lot more than the Ravens need to ask from Lamar Jackson, because the Ravens can play a little keep away, helps out their defense. They can hand it off. Lamar doesn't have to make every play. I mean, he did 2 weeks ago against the Colts, but when things are going well, he doesn't have to do everything on his own. They have a good run game. They can play complementary football. For the Chargers, it was all on Justin Herbert on Sunday, and he struggled. And once you fall behind, they can pin their ears back and they can get after the quarterback. That's the big difference between those two teams. Two best teams in the AFC. The difference is the Chargers can't stop the run. They can't fall back on the run game. The Ravens can. makes it a little bit easier on their quarterback. Justin Herbert is the better quarterback than Lamar, but Lamar has the better coach. He's got the better rushing attack. He's got the better plan B. He's got a defense that can help him a little bit more. That's the difference between those two. It played out on Sunday, and it may play out in some of the biggest spots at year's end. That when the Chargers are trying to go win, right, these other teams may be a little more versatile than Justin Herbert and the Chargers are right now.
Where Luke was right.
Christian McCaffrey. I said I would move on. As good of a player as he is, I would move on because of the injury concerns. He played three games all of last year. He has played only three games this year, and he's out for at least the next three. So do that math. He will have missed 19 of the last 25 games at minimum if he returns as soon as he can now this year after being put on the IR. These second contracts for running backs don't work out. He's only 25. He's only played 54 games, but he's already to the point where he's beat up. He's worn down, and when he gets injured, the worst part is he then gets re-injured. It happened last year. It just happened this past week. It's one thing to get injured, but can you count on that person to get back quickly? Or are they just going to, is it just the start of a series of issues? Gets injured. Okay, he's close to returning. Oh, he re-injured himself. Oh, now it's a little bit slower in his rehab. It's going to be even longer than we anticipated. We were told this is a mild injury. He's going to miss at least 6 weeks now and maybe more for a mild injury originally. That's a concern. And when you have a quarterback that needs that running back, that is also a big concern. Christian McCaffrey has missed 19 of 25 games at minimum. Obviously not worth the money they're giving him right now.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Cardinals. I give the Cardinals a lot of credit. Last undefeated team, but the way they won on Sunday by going to Cleveland and beating the Browns by over 20 points in their own building. Now the Cardinals last 2 weeks have won a different style of game. They won a defensive battle against the Niners, and they won more of a physical game while relying on their defense a bit as well on the road outdoors against Cleveland. At a certain point, I just have to admit I was wrong. I got to give credit where credit is due. The Cardinals are undefeated, and the way they've won a couple of these last games, I got to give them a lot of props. I still wouldn't pick them to go win the Super Bowl, but the way they're playing, you know, you got to put them towards the top of the power rankings. They have been very impressive so far this season in the way they've won. And to end, let's do a little bit of a combination where I was right, where I was wrong. We don't even need the intro. I'll just say the Patriots-Cowboys game. I thought the Patriots were going to cover the spread, and they almost did against the Cowboys. Almost doesn't win you any money. But what I came away from this game with was that this was one of those games the Patriots would win for the last 20 years. In fact, I told you I think the Patriots are going to be a playoff team this year, and now they're 2-4. They still have a 30% chance of making the playoffs. So I'll tell you I'm wrong about the Patriots and the way that this season has gone. But the difference in that game on Sunday, I misjudged the impact that Tom Brady had on that team, and it sounds silly because he's the greatest of all time, and I've always acknowledged that. But you can't replace him with a rookie quarterback. My point being, that game on Sunday, that's the game the Patriots would win every time over the past 20 years with Tom Brady. They have lost a bunch of close games this year. They lost to the Dolphins by one possession at the end of the game. They lost to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers on a missed field goal. They lost to the Cowboys in overtime. A lot of close losses. And the difference for the Patriots this year and these close losses that are normally close wins, you take away the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady, you replace him with a rookie. And, of course, those close wins then become close losses. On the flip side for the Cowboys, those are the types of games they usually lose. Why are they winning them now and have won five in a row? Because Dak Prescott is playing that well, and it comes down to the quarterback. You need that quarterback to make the plays at the end of the game. It's why I think the Browns are struggling a little bit, because Baker Mayfield is not that guy. It's why the Vikings are only 500, because Kirk Cousins can be that guy. They don't trust him, though. And so they play a bunch of close games. And the Patriots play a bunch of close games. Why? Because you have Mac Jones now instead of Tom Brady. But the teams that win those close games, it's because they have the quarterback that can get it done in those big spots. That's all it comes down to. The quarterback at the end of the game. Are they good enough to make those biggest plays? Right now for the Patriots, Mac Jones, he looks really good, but not good enough to win those close games. Dak Prescott, on the other hand, has played really well, and he has been good enough to win those close games. And that was the difference on Sunday. The Cowboys now have their quarterback that can win those games. The Patriots no longer have their quarterback who always won those types of games. When we come back, is this the year that things turn around for the Georgia sports fan? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Are things finally turning around for the Georgia sports fan? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Game 3 of the NLCS tonight, Braves-Dodgers. I got a couple of takeaways about the baseball postseason, a couple of decisions from the last 24 hours I don't really understand. I'll get to that in just a moment. But the Braves-Dodgers, a big Game 3 tonight in the NLCS. You could hear it on our sister station. First pitch is 5:08 here Eastern time. So, the Braves, you win tonight, you go up 3-0. Obviously, only one team has ever come back from that. That's a very tough hill to climb if you're the Dodgers, even if they're at home the next two. So a huge game. Charlie Morton on the mound against Walker Buehler. Great pitching matchup. We'll see how it goes. You hope for another good performance out of Morton because you imagine you're going to get it out of Walker Buehler on the other side. And the Braves have the momentum, but the Dodgers are now at home, and they're desperate, and they're backed into a corner. So it should be a lot of fun coming up a little bit later on this evening. And then you have the NBA starting tonight, as mentioned earlier, and the Atlanta Hawks were in the Final Four last year. So the Braves are in back-to-back NLCSs. The Hawks were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and now you have Georgia football, the number one team in the country by themselves, number one team in the country during a season all alone for the first time in 38 years. Everything seems to be turning up Georgia's way, but here's the problem. The problem is that, and by the way, the Atlanta Falcons are the only one not holding up their end of the bargain. No surprise there. They've been miserable for years since that Super Bowl. But here's the problem. The problem isn't that it's a lack of success. This isn't like I'm trying to think of some city with just terrible teams. I can't even think of one off the top of my head. It's not like it's some sort of city where the teams can never win. All their teams are just a bunch of losers. They never make the playoffs. A city that hasn't had a playoff appearance in years. That's not the case here. Right, the Falcons were in a Super Bowl not too long ago. The Braves have won a bunch of divisions. Yeah, the Hawks have struggled for a long time, but they've made the playoffs about a decade ago, and they were back this past year. The problem is that they rip your heart out. Like the Braves last year getting up 3-1 and then blowing it. Like Georgia blowing a double-digit lead, in a national championship, or falling just short in the SEC title game once again to Alabama. Or even the Hawks last year, in the Eastern Conference Finals. They get there and come up a little bit short. They get you close enough to get all excited just to then rip that heart out. The Falcons take that big lead in the Super Bowl and lose in the second half. That's the big problem. Right? An article was written for The Athletic talking about this. Are things finally changing for Georgia fans? Maybe. It has been an exciting time for the Georgia sports fan, but the problem always is that you get close, and then that's when they pull your heart out. It's not just that the Falcons are always in last place, and the Hawks are always in last place, and the Braves are always in last place, and you just have a bunch of losers. That's a little bit easier to accept in that you just know going in, like, oh, I don't need to get my hopes up. We have a bunch of bad teams. Instead of getting all excited and then, having your heart broken. But when you look at these teams, who has the best chance to bring that championship back to the area? Well, the Braves are already off to a 2-0 head start trying to get to the World Series. And at least entering yesterday, the way the Red Sox played last night, this may have changed things. I don't know. But the Braves were the favorites and the look-ahead odds to win the World Series as of yesterday, because they're already halfway to at least getting to the World Series and the way that they're playing and their pitching staff. And if they beat, the Brewers and the Dodgers, that obviously looks pretty good. The Hawks, I don't think, will be able to replicate their success from a year ago. I think they'll be good. They'll be competitive. They'll be an interesting team, but don't anticipate the Hawks to be one of the final two teams left in the East. Last year, I think that was a little bit of just the stars aligning. And Georgia, I've said on the show this week, it is their national championship to lose. I said that yesterday. I don't know if they're going to win it. I still have some concerns, some doubts about Georgia, right? Once bitten, twice shy, but it's their national title to lose. I would give Georgia the best chance still. Even though the Braves are up 2-0, the Dodgers on paper are still the best team in baseball, and I would also favor either the Astros or the Red Sox over the Braves in a World Series right now. But Georgia is the team. I don't know if they can get past Alabama. I'm still concerned about that matchup. But that's the last test on the way to the playoff. And then you may have to get past Alabama a second time. If you don't the first time in the playoff, that may be the only team that could stand in Georgia's way. But they are the favorite, and it's their national championship to lose. But there's an opportunity here in the next couple of months. Things could get real good for that Georgia sports fan. The Hawks season is starting up. The Braves are two wins away from a World Series berth. Georgia's the number one team in the country. Right, things could start to really look up. Or it's just the same old, where you continue to get your heart broken. The Braves lose in, like, the World Series. They blow a 2-0 lead in the World Series. The Hawks have a terrible season, miss the playoffs. The Falcons finish in last place, and Georgia loses again to Alabama in crushing fashion and break your heart. That's the other alternative. That could happen as well. Speaking of the baseball postseason, with the Braves-Dodgers coming up tonight, two things I don't get about the playoffs from the last 24 hours. Number one, who thought it was a good idea? I mean, Fox obviously did. Who thought it was a good idea to put Alex Rodriguez outdoors live at Fenway Park last night? Now, A-Rod is part of the coverage on Fox pre- and post-game, and I don't think he does a great job in the booth on Sunday Night Baseball. I think he's much better in the studio as an analyst with David Ortiz, Frank Thomas, Kevin Burkhardt. That's like the Charles Barkley inside the NBA TNT version for baseball. They don't give you a ton of hard-hitting stuff, but it's pretty comical. They do give you a couple of good anecdotes or pieces along the way. I think it's a good show. I think they do a good job. Frank Thomas really doesn't add anything, but the other guys are all good. But who thought it was a good idea to put A-Rod outdoors at Fenway? I mean, it's entertaining. It could be good TV, but the problem was the fans were chanting F-U, but actually saying the word, F-U A-Rod, that they had to block out the audio. They couldn't beep it. And the way it works, they can't mute. You know, you can't just mute the crowd and only hear A-Rod, so they had to mute everything. So if you happened to be up after the game last night, and it was a blowout, so you probably weren't watching any more anyways, but if you were watching baseball and you watched the postgame last night, you couldn't even hear half the things they were saying on the postgame show because they just had to drop the audio. It was like watching a silent film. Their mouth's moving, but you don't hear anything because in the background, while A-Rod's talking or any of the guys are talking, in the background you would hear F-U, but actually saying the word, F-U A-Rod, and they don't want that to go over out over TV on Fox, so they have to just drop the audio completely. So it was a bit of a mess last night. I'm sitting there watching just because, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan. They won. It's at Fenway Park. Half the postgame show, if it was a half hour long, 15 minutes was just silence. And it was awkward because it would cut in and out. So you'd get like two words, and then they have to drop the audio. Oh, I wonder what he was going to say. And then it comes back in the middle of a sentence, like, oh, what is he talking about? Then it dropped out again. It was so awkward and tough to watch. Who thought it was a good idea to put A-Rod? You knew you were going to get that reaction. And then if you're going to do that, just put it on air. I mean, it was almost midnight last night. Kids are not up at midnight on a Monday watching that postgame show. All right, if the fans in the background are dropping F-bombs, it's in the background. It's not A-Rod doing, Andrew Dice Clay nursery rhymes on the microphone. It's in the backdrop. A-Rod's talking, and in the background you could hear people, just like at a game, you hear them chanting terrible things like that sometimes fans do, saying swear words. But come on, you've heard other things on TV before. You can let that slide. But I thought, watching that last night, I thought, man, this was a poor idea. Whatever Fox executive thought, let's put A-Rod outside with all the Red Sox fans at Fenway. That will go over well. Yeah, they had to mute the whole postgame show because of what the fans were chanting. And the other thing I don't get about the baseball playoffs is the scheduled start time for the Dodgers-Braves today. 5:08 first pitch Eastern time. The game is in L.A. So, do the math. What does that mean? It's a 2 o'clock start in L.A.? I don't feel bad for Dodgers fans because, I mean, you know, their team spends so much money and they've been to the World Series. You know, you don't need to feel bad for Dodgers fans. But that's pretty ridiculous to me. You're trying to grow the game of baseball. Why would you put a playoff game at 2 o'clock local time on a Tuesday? The people that have to go there or want to go there to the game, the people that want to watch it, they're all working. It's 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. It's the biggest game of the year for the Dodgers. They're down 2-0. They need to win tonight. Biggest game of their season, it's at 2 o'clock local time. Makes no sense. You have two games tonight, Red Sox, Astros, Dodgers, Braves. Major League Baseball is obviously telling you that they think the Astros-Red Sox game is the bigger draw and more appealing. That's why they put that at 8 o'clock. But wouldn't it make more sense to have that at 5 o'clock in Boston? Not as bad. People get out of work and they head home and watch the game, or they head right to the stadium. Maybe you leave work a little early. 5 o'clock, not terrible. And then the Dodgers game would be 5 o'clock on the West Coast, 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. And as that game goes to midnight, well, out there it's only, you know, 9 o'clock. Instead of when the Red Sox-Astros game goes to midnight, it actually is midnight for the people at the game. Makes no sense. I mean, obviously, they must know what they're doing and that the Red Sox-Astros will get better ratings, they believe. That'd be a better draw. But I never got this about baseball playoffs. They always put some of the biggest games during the day. I mean, they did it last week when we have the divisional series, and you have four series to get through. And you want to, certain days, you want them to all play in the same day, and you're playing 1 o'clock baseball on a Tuesday. You know, in the playoffs, biggest games of the year, and most people can't even watch them because they're all working. or even the kids are at school. You're trying to bring in a younger audience to the game of baseball. Then you put the game on while they're at school. They can't even watch it. Right? You got a lot of young Dodger fans that are trying to get interested in the game. Rob Manfred's always talking about how young people aren't into baseball. Well, don't put their biggest game of the year on TV while said kids are in algebra class. That doesn't help. So I don't get this idea. But the Braves are coming up at 5, Red Sox Astros at 8. 843-721-9400 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
All right. Apologize, Mr. Lou, for missing that Vanderbilt game. But it just, that 18 points, I didn't go for that.
No, you almost nailed it. You said Vanderbilt was going to win, and they probably should have.
And they should have, yeah. Bob's hard go. We won. Damn it, I can't. Blah, blah, blah. I said, by what point? I mean, they said 18. What happened to 18 points? It didn't seem like no killer game to me. So,
no.
I could believe Texas A&M's going to be an 18-point favorite or better.
You think Texas A&M will win by 18 or more?
Yeah. Because
right.
Texas A&M's playing, they're 6-0, I think, now. So,
no, well, they've lost a couple of games, but they are a much better team than Vanderbilt.
Right, yeah. They go cream. Carolina's going to be, they go be real sore Sunday. I just feel for them.
A&M is favored by 21. So do you think they win by over 21?
See there? I told you. I was close.
Well, do you think they're going to cover it? Would you take Texas A&M to win?
I know they'll cover it. I know they'll cover it. You know?
Yeah.
There's no competition for Texas A&M. There is no way. Not the way they're playing. If they can barely beat Vanderbilt, there is no way they go beat Texas A&M.
That's
no
right.
No way.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I don't think they do win. I think they do get blown out Saturday against Texas A&M. What?
Yeah, if they get blown out by 30 or 40 points, I believe it. You know?
Yeah.
It might be improving that number.
Do the Braves take a 3-0 lead tonight?
It could be possible.
Well, it could be. But is it going to happen? Are the Braves going to win tonight?
Yeah.
All right. You got the Braves
winning.
Ball,
so they
are.
Should do pretty good.
Okay,
you know?
So you think the Braves go up 3-0 and they get one step closer to a World Series appearance?
Now, if they had a bar night with the pressures on the Dodgers, you know, the Dodgers could come back and win another game.
Yeah,
they could. You know, you see weird things in playoff baseball. You know, they might act like, you know, we're 3-0, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, 3-1, 3-2, 3. You've seen it, Mr. Luke.
That's right.
Then the other team wins.
Yep.
I've seen Dodgers get behind and come ahead, you know?
Yeah. Hey, the Braves saw it last year, so they should know it very well. Up 3-1, up 2-0, let the Dodgers come back. This series ain't over until you get to that fourth win. But I think the pressure is already on the Dodgers tonight. You don't have to wait until tomorrow. They got to win tonight, and they got their guy on the mound to do it. By the way, in regards to the SEC this weekend for South Carolina, you look at some of these numbers. Texas A&M favored by 21, Alabama favored by 26, Mississippi State favored by 21, Ole Miss favored by 9 against LSU. That's really the only game of interest in the SEC this weekend. Arkansas is playing Arkansas Pine Bluff. There's not even a spread on that game yet. So in the SEC this Saturday, the only game of potential interest is LSU-Ole Miss, a week late this Saturday in the SEC. Coming up, the NBA begins tonight, and I got the numbers that you need to know. It has nothing to do with the games themselves, but we'll get to those numbers when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Without a warning, you broke my heart. You took it, darling, and you tore it apart. You left me sitting in the dark crying. You said your love for me was dying.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, on this day 22 years ago, that was the last time the Braves won the pennant. So they'll try to get one game closer with a win tonight against the Dodgers at 5 o'clock. Coming up a little bit later on. The NBA season also begins tonight. You know, I always love these surveys and polls and data and numbers. So I found this for the upcoming NBA season. Lakers fans spend the most on team merchandise, $300 a season. Timberwolves fans spend the least, $74. And there's all sorts of interesting pieces of data in this, such as 20% of NBA fans would be willing to spend $50 or more above the average ticket price to see Steph Curry. He's the number one player that fans would be willing to spend extra money to see, Steph Curry. Number two is LeBron James. Number three would be Giannis. I also like this one. Unless their favorite team is playing, 17% of NBA fans tune out James Harden games. So unless their team is facing James Harden, if it's just a regular game on TV and James Harden is playing, 17% of NBA fans say they're not going to watch. They do not want to watch James Harden. 15% say they'll tune out if LeBron James is playing and their team is not involved. That's the second highest. Now, that's not great because, you know, you go back to Michael Jordan. I don't think we always compare the two, but when you have that biggest star of the sport, I don't think 15% of the fan base was tuning out Michael Jordan. You want people to tune in for your biggest star. Now, that's just those who participate in the survey, as small of a sample size that may be, but, you know, that's not good. Clippers fans spend the most on alcohol. Pelicans fans spend the least on alcohol at games, only $6. So the New Orleans Pelicans fans, not big-time drinkers, only spending $6 on the beer at the games. And then how about this? Who's the biggest front-runner? Which fans are the biggest fair-weather fans? The fan base that spends the most money on other teams' merchandise, right? If you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, you can't be wearing other teams' stuff. Well, the answer is the Golden State Warriors. Warriors fans spend more money on other teams' merchandise than any other fan base in the league. $157 a year for the average fan on other teams. The Bucks are number two, Nuggets number three. That's not good. You got to rep your team and your team only. Meanwhile, like I said, teams that spend the least on their own team's merchandise, Timberwolves are number one. The Hawks make the top 10 of that list. A lot of interesting data for this. Stars that will make fans tune in. Number one was Curry. Lillard and Durant are the top three. Make fans tune out. Harden, Kyrie, and LeBron. But a lot of I always love these pieces of data. Fans who spend the least on concession stands, the Pelicans spend the least as well. I got to go to a Pelicans game at that Smoothie King Center. They have some great prices, apparently. They have the cheapest beer and the cheapest food. The Hawks are number two in terms of least amount of money spent at the concession stand. Either cheap stadiums or cheap fan bases. The Hornets are also in the bottom 10 for least amount of money spent at the concession stand. Those are the places to go, or they just have really cheap fan bases that, you know, eat before they go to the game and don't get anything at the concession stand. The important numbers for the NBA season. Who do people want to see? Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant get more people to the TV than any other star. Who do people want to tune out? James Harden, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James turn more people away from the TV than anybody else. Interesting data about the NBA season, which begins tonight. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What a funky finish to your Tuesday afternoon on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And you can also take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Also, you can stream the show through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And the podcast is also available through that app or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page if you ever miss anything from the show. As always, we covered so much throughout this afternoon in and out of the world of sports. Today is also, by the way, the anniversary of the album Damn the Torpedoes, which came out on this day back in 1979. So throw that on from this Tom Petty fan. Damn the Torpedoes. Great from him all those years ago. Let this be the message of the day before we go. We started the afternoon with this. If you're a football coach, put the game in the hands of your offense these days instead of relying on your defense. I loved the play call from the Bills last night. Go for the win, especially when you're on the road, and don't play the tie hoping your defense can play a role. That's not the NFL anymore. It's not about defense. You win with your offense these days. And I love that call last night from a defensive coach realizing we have to go for the win with our offense now. Other coaches need to do the same. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.